This verse is from Prahlad Maharaj's prayers to Lord Nrsingadev, and he makes this point about how when we offer our service to the Lord, we become complete. Naivatmana prabhurayam nijalabhapurno manam janat avidushat karano vranite yad yach jano bhagavate vidati tamanam tachchatmane pratimukhasya yata mukhashri. Translation: the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is always fully satisfied in Himself. Therefore, when something is offered to Him, the offering by the Lord's mercy is for the benefit of the devotee. For the Lord does not need service from anyone. To give an example, if one's face is decorated, the reflection of one's face in a mirror is also seen to be decorated. Srila Prabhupada's purport. In Bhakti Yoga, it is recommended that a devotee follow 9 principles: Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Arjanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. This service of glorifying the Lord by hearing, chanting, and so on, of course, meant for the is not, of course, meant for the benefit of the Lord. This devotional service is recommended for the benefit of the devotee. The Lord is always glorious whether the devotee glorifies Him or not. But if the devotee engages in glorifying the Lord, the devotee himself automatically becomes glorious. Cheto darpanam arjanam pavamaha davagni nirvapanam. By glorifying the Lord constantly, the living entity becomes purified in the core of his heart, and thus he can understand that he does not belong to the material world, but is a spirit soul whose actual activity is to advance in Krishna consciousness, so that he may become free from the material clutches. Thus the blazing fire of material existence is immediately extinguished. Bhava mahadavagni nirvapanam. A foolish person is amazed that Krishna orders sarvadharman parityaja mamekam sharanam braja. Abandon all varieties of religious activities and just surrender unto me. Some foolish scholars even say that this is too much to demand. But this demand is not for the benefit of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rather, it is for the benefit of human society. If human beings individually and collectively surrender everything to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in full Krishna consciousness, all of human society will benefit. One who does not dedicate everything to the Supreme Lord is described in this verse as a vidusha, a rascal. In Bhagavad Gita 7:15, the Lord Himself speaks in the same way. Namam duskritina mudha prapadyante naradama mayaya prithagyana asuram bhavam ashritaha. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me. Because of ignorance and misfortune, the atheists and the Naradamas, the lowest of men, do not surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, although the Supreme Lord Krishna is full in Himself, He appears in different yugas to demand the surrender of the conditioned souls, so that they will benefit by becoming free from the material clutches. In conclusion, the more we engage in Krishna consciousness and render service unto the Lord, the more we benefit. Krishna does not need service from any of us. May I have a 10th canto, 14th chapter, please? So in this verse, Prahlad Maharaj gives the example of somebody decorating their face, and then when they look in the mirror, they see that the reflection is also decorated. So similarly, when we decorate the Lord, or when we glorify Him, then because we're part and parcel of the Lord, we become decorated, and we become invigorated. So when someone discovers this connection, one's eternal connection to the Supreme Lord as a part and parcel, then he or she can adjust accordingly in his or her life. The same idea is given in the 10th canto, 14th chapter, in Brahma's prayers. And there's a discussion at the end of Brahma's prayers about why the expansions of Krishna that were the boys and the cows, the boys and the calves that Krishna created after Brahma stole away the original boys and calves. One day when Krishna was on a picnic with his friends, Brahma came to observe, and he thought, how can that be the Supreme Personality of Godhead playing like that, like a little boy? So he decided to test him, and he stole away the calves who had wandered off. And then when Krishna had gone away to look for the calves on behalf of the boys, Brahma stole away the boys. And when Krishna realized that Brahma was playing a trick, he expanded himself into boy both the, in other words, he made duplicates of the calves and the boys, and they were exactly the same as the other ones. Except this time they were Vishnu forms. And when the boys went home to their village, the mothers couldn't tell them apart because they looked identical, except for they had 10 times more affection for them than they had for their so-called original sons. And when the cows saw the calves, even though these calves had been weaned off the milking at that point, the cows ran after them and showed so much affection that Balaram began to think that something was going on. And he could see that Krishna was up to something. And when Brahma came back, after just an instant of stealing away the calves and boys, and saw that the identical calves and boys were there, he became bewildered. And when he approached Krishna, Krishna revealed that the calves and boys that were identical, that he had expanded, were actually Vishnu forms. Ramadi muti shukala niyamena tishtan na navatarama karod bhuvanesha kintu. Krishna can expand himself unlimitedly. Departure eva hida shantanama bhupeta dipayate vrvita heta samana dharma. Just like one candle is lighting other candles, and the quality of the light is the same, so Krishna also expands himself into unlimited other forms, Vishnu forms. And there's one original candle, even though all those Vishnu forms are plenary. They have the same potencies and powers. So those boys and calves had the same qualities as Vishnu. And Brahma, seeing how everything was emanating from Krishna, from this cowherd boy, that he was Swayam Bhagavan, all opulence and all energies were coming from him, fell down and offered his dandavat obeisances at the feet of Krishna. And then when he got up, he offered these prayers, and acknowledging that some people may say, I know Krishna. But he said, as far as I'm concerned, and I'm the first person in the universe, and I've studied the Vedas 3 times, and I have 4 heads, I don't know who Krishna is. And that even if scientists could at one point count all the stars in the sky and all the grains of sand on the beach, they would still not be able to count the qualities of Krishna. So these were some of his prayers. And near the end of his prayers, it's described by Shukadeva Goswami that Shukadeva Goswami said, O King, for every created being, the dearmost thing is certainly his own self. The dearness of everything else is due only to the dearness of the self. And for this reason, O best of kings, the embodied soul is self-centered. He is more attached to his own body and self than he is to his so-called possessions. So then, indeed, for persons who think the body is the self, O best of kings, those things whose importance lies only in their relationship with the body are never as dear as the body itself. If a person comes to the stage of considering the body mine instead of me, he will certainly not consider the body as dear as his own self. After all, even as the body is growing old and useless, one's desire to continue living remains strong. Therefore, it is his own self that is most dear to every embodied being. And it is simply for the satisfaction of this self that the whole material creation of moving and non-moving entities exists. May I repeat? Therefore, it is his own self that is most dear to every embodied living being. And it is simply for the satisfaction of this self that the whole material creation of moving and non-moving entities exists. Mystery solved. It's what everyone's doing. Then, Krishnamenam avehitvam atmanam akilatmanam jagadditaya sopyatra dehi vabhati mayaya. You should know Krishna to be the original soul of all living entities. For the benefit of the whole universe, he has, out of his causeless mercy, appeared as an ordinary human being. He has done this by the strength of his internal potency. So Krishna here is identified as atmanam akilatmanam, the soul of the soul, the soul of all souls. So the idea is that the body is dear to us because we're in it and because I identify with myself. And anything that I consider dear is because I identify myself with it. And I just had a vivid example of this the other day. I've just been throwing away tons of stuff. And before my mother passed away, she gave me a bunch of pictures and memorabilia. Every note I ever wrote her since I was a little kid, she kept it. I couldn't believe it. Yeah, you had the same thing?
Report cards,
absolutely.
Oh,
yep, everything's there complete and it chronologically organized also. And so I was going through and I had pictures from Little League, from playing baseball. And when I was just a little kid, and there's a picture of the whole team there, you know, kneeling down with our baseball uniforms on. And the only person I could actually recognize in the whole group was me. And I thought about that. I was thinking, why is it that I only recognized that body and not the other bodies? It's because I identify with it. It's because it was more important to me than all the other ones, because I'm in it. So I thought, of course, I would remember that one because I identify with that body. And so I remember that one, and I remember where I was and all these kinds of things. So actually, we're not the body, but we identify with the body and we consider the body to be dear while we're in it. And everything in relationship with the body then has some significance to me because it's mine. My eye becomes my mind, and I with my consciousness, I mark everything. It's like when I go for a walk in the morning, I see these dogs that come out to walk also with their masters, and they mark everything. That's their main thing in life, to mark everything. That's what gang members do too. They go around town. In fact, I had a realization once when I was watching Street Dogs in Vrindavan. I was thinking, that's what gang members become in their next life. Probably not in Vrindavan, but somewhere they become some kind of a street dog, because that's all they do all day is fight over their turf, and they mark it with pens and stuff. They'll spray paint and stuff. This is my corner, that's your corner. And everyone marks, you know, this is my area. And it's because I identify that. Like when neighbors put up a fence, they'll identify up to this point, this line is mine. And over that, that's your thing. It's all earth. You know, and the pebble that's on that side, that's his pebble. That's my pebble. I and mine. But the equation completely changes when we take to the rescue. Sorry. When we take this verse to heart, Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vishishyate, it solves all the problems which are caused by this consciousness of duality. That's mine, this is for others. It's all coming from Krishna, and it's all Krishna's energy. Bhoktanam Jagatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Suridam Sarvabhutanam Gyatvamam Shantim Richiti. One gets peace when one relinquishes everything and realizes, nothing to relinquish actually, because I don't have it in the first place. But when I relinquish the false identification that I have, that this is mine, this is for others, and it's all Krishna's. It's meant to be engaged in Krishna's service, which also includes the idea of friends and enemies, which is a really painful polarity that I have a friend, I have an enemy, but when one is, when one sees all living entities, as Prabhupada mentioned in the purport, in relationship with Krishna, one never hates anything or any being. Yas min sarvani bhutani maivad bud vijanataha tatrako mahakashoka ekat vamanupashyataha. This kind of vision, seeing that all living entities are Krishna's, and I'm also Krishna's. And atmana makilatmana means that the same kind of attention that I give to myself and everything in relationship to myself, when I realize that Krishna is actually the source of myself, he's the self of myself, he's the soul of my soul, that much, how much more attention will give? And with full satisfaction. Because when I do it independently, it's like the hand severed from the body. There's no value in it. But when I actually feed Krishna, when I actually glorify Krishna, then I feel complete. I'm connected to the complete whole again. And that's the source of my, the very source of my life and the source of my nourishment. I'm the fed, he's the feeder. So, Om Purnam Adah Purnamidam. He's completely perfect also. There's nothing to worry about when one surrenders to Krishna, because Krishna is completely perfect. Means he has all potencies to understand exactly whatever I need. Therefore, the pure devotee actually never even asks anything from Krishna, even in extreme circumstances. There's because he or she thinks, obviously Krishna already knows, and also there's a reluctance to ask anything from Krishna, because one factually sees that my relationship is the servant, not as the served. And therefore, the whole intention of the pure devotee is simply to serve. When Prahlad Maharaj was offered a benediction by Lord Nrsimhadev, he said, I'm not a vanik. I'm not a merchant. I didn't do this to get something in return. I'm just doing this because you're my master and I'm your servant. And this is what I do. It's my constitutional position. And I'm completely happy doing it. There is complete satisfaction in that. And this understanding is necessary to have a progressive life, because then I'm investing properly. There used to be a play that the devotees did on the street. We used to do street plays all the time, like in New York City. We actually had the whole Vaikuntha player team there. And when we go out for Harinam, we'd stop, and then they would do a play, a skit, right on the street. Hundreds of people would gather around to watch it. One of them was putting your money in the wrong bank account. Do you remember this one?
I thought you were going to say the one where your hands went on strike and your legs went on strike.
Oh, that's another one that's applicable. The hands and legs, all the senses go on strike because they don't want to feed the stomach. He's just sitting there enjoying. Why should I feed him? They go on strike, and after a while they become tired and withered, and then they decide to come back and feed the stomach again, and they become nourished and satisfied. Actually, the stomach's the biggest giver, because everything we give to it, it gives immediately. All it's doing is giving back as soon as it gets it. And that's what Krishna's like too. As soon as we give to Krishna, he's distributing to everyone in multiples. That's our relationship. But the play I was thinking of was the man who's saving money and saving money and saving money, but he's going to the teller and he's giving the wrong number, wrong bank account. And over time, he's investing. And finally he goes back and says, now I'm going to retire. And he goes back to the bank and he says, okay, here's my bank book. Where's all my money? And they say, you don't have anything in here. And then he realizes he's been putting in somebody else's bank account. It's like he's bankrupt after a whole lifetime of giving. And the purport of the story was that when we give on the material side, so-called investment in the body and all of its and all of our attachments in relationship to the body, we're putting in the wrong bank account. Nothing's there. So at the end, you don't get to keep anything. It's just the account is wiped out. I was saying the other day when I was in Washington, D.C., I was just thinking about this, about how death is the most, dying is the most radical thing you can do. I mean, there's a lot of radical things you can do in this world, but dying, that's the most radical. I watched it, especially with my mother, because my father died first, and then she had whatever, possessions he had. She assumed all those things. But when she left, she just left everything behind. I mean, when someone leaves everything behind, then it's really radical. You just give up everything that you've accumulated, that you're attached to, and then all of a sudden you just leave it and go. That's radical. And the body as well. But transcendental life means to leave it before you're forced to leave it. That's a transcendentalist. And there's an example of this in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the story of the demigods who were defeated by the demons because they had offended their spiritual master, Brihaspati. Particularly Indra had developed an enjoying spirit, and he was being worshipped by the demigods. And when the spiritual master, Brihaspati, entered the assembly, Indra didn't get up. He didn't get up to offer his obeisances, and neither did the other demigods. They just went on. And Brihaspati immediately noticed it, and he just turned around and walked out. And just after that, Indra and all the demigods fell down, and they lost all their power because they offended their spiritual master. So after that, they went to Brahma to find out what to do, and he told them, you have to go to Vishvarup, the son of Twashta, and he can become your priest, and you treat him like your spiritual master, and he'll do some yajnas to help you get your power back. So when they went to Vishvarup, they were warned that sometimes he also has sympathy towards the demons, but he'll also help you. So he accepted their cause, and he performed a yajna, and he also gave them the Narayana Kavacha, which gave them the power to overcome the demons. And after that, Indra again committed an offense because he noticed that Vishvarup, who was his priest, the priest of the demigods, was offering oblations in the fire. He had three heads, and with one of his heads he was offering to the demigods, and with another head he was offering to the demons. And Indra detected that. He thought, now the demons will become strong again and we'll lose our opulence. So he cut off the heads of Vishvarup. Then Vishvarup's father, Twashta, became very angry at Indra and performed a yajna in order to create a demon who was the enemy of Indra. But he reversed the mantras in the yajna, and therefore he created a demon of whom Indra was the enemy, to reverse the syllable. That was Vritrasura. And Vritrasura, when he came after the demigods, they threw all their weapons at him, and he simply swallowed them. And they were as if they were of no significance whatsoever. So the demigods then went to Lord Vishnu and asked him what to do. And he told them that they had to go to a sage named Didichi. And Didichi had performed great austerities his whole life. He was a very advanced person. And ask him for charity. What kind of charity? His bones. Somebody comes door to door and asks you for donation. In fact, we should tell people that. How much should I give? Well, we know one guy, he gave his bones. So Didichi, when the demigods approached him, he, first of all, although from the very beginning, because he was self-realized, he was ready to give his body in charity. As Krishna says, Krishna told his friends when they were walking in the forest one day, and his friends got hungry. So they said, please, we need something to eat. So Krishna says, you go beg from the Brahmins, where they're just about to perform sacrifice. And he said, Etavaj janmasam palyam dehinami hitehishu. Prana artha dhyavacha, shreya archananam sada. He said everyone in this lifetime should give their prana, their life energy, artha, their wealth, dhya, their intelligence, and vacha, their words, shreya acharanam sada. They should always give these things for the benefit of others. Everyone who's embodied, that's your duty, Krishna said. All the time you should do like that. So he said, you should go ask them and they should give something in return. So when Dadichi was asked by the demigods, at first he hesitated in a joking way, just so he could hear them speak about self-realization. Because to a very advanced person, hearing even the very basics about spiritual life is relishable. Just for someone who's actually experiencing that he or she is not the body, hearing Dehino Smenyata Dehe Komaran Yovaranjara Tata Dehantara Praptu Tiras Tatra Namuyati, that the embodied soul's changing from one body to the next, seems like an elementary verse. But the more advanced one is, the more one relishes hearing such verses. So Dadichi was like that. He wanted to hear, tell me something first before I give this charity. So they spoke to him and said, you're going to lose your body anyway, so you might as well give it up first. So transcendental life means giving it up, giving it all to Krishna before it's taken away from you. And not like Gopala Bhan, because Gopala Bhan was a rascal. And all his friends told Gopala Bhan that he was a rascal. And one day Gopala Bhan was walking with his friends in the field. Gopala Bhan was a farmer. And Gopala Bhan had a big tray that he had collected from the field of wheat. And his friends were saying, Gopala Bhan, you're such a rascal. You're such an atheist. You never give anything to God. And just then a big wind came and it blew the wheat into the sky and across the field. He said, I offer that to God. But a transcendentalist actually is offering everything to Krishna, knowing that it's not my property anyway. It already belongs to Krishna. It's an illusion for me to hold on to it. And at the same time is realizing that the more I give, the more the fire of devotion is increasing. And that person is relishing giving, realizing there's no lack. Om Purnamada Purnamidam. Krishna is completely whole. He's full of all potencies. So the more I give, the more it comes, the more I feel full. So a devotee never lives in scarcity consciousness. I hate scarcity consciousness. It's this idea that I have to hold back everything because I can't afford it, or I can't, there won't be enough for me, or something like that. But transcendental life means realizing Om Purnam Mada Purnaminam. Krishna is the supreme whole. And he can supply, he is supplying everything. And the more I give to him, the more I become satisfied automatically. So this verse, living in this verse, Om Purnam Mada Purnaminam, meditating how Krishna is full of all potencies, and gradually through increments, turning one's consciousness towards Krishna through scriptural evidence, Pramanais tat saracharais tadabhyasair narantaram bodhayanatmanatmanam bhaktim apyutamam labet. One can come to the highest stage of bhakti, which means giving one's whole life to Krishna, and one's full consciousness. Ananya bhakti means unalloyed. Gradually, step by step, through pramanais, through developing more and more faith in scripture, in shastra. Shraddha actually means to have faith in scripture. That Krishna says, surrender unto me, I'll deliver you from all sinful reaction. The more I believe this, the more I hear Krishna talking to me directly when I read Bhagavad Gita, and that I take that literally, how he's saying that, and that Masuchaha, don't worry, the more I have faith in those words, the more I'll act like that. So pramanais, tatsaracharais, then my activities become corrected. Sarachar means I act according to the injunctions of the shastra, gradually amending all of my habits so that they're in line. And abhyasar, practicing this on a regular basis, because naturally the force of material nature and the modes of material nature is so strong. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, "Daiva hi esha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya." It's very difficult to overcome this. Even great sages and yogis are swept away by the waves of the that come from the force of the three modes of material nature. So it requires strict, serious, and sincere practice to fix one's mind in devotional service, to not be swept away by the modes of nature. It's actually the norm in this world is to be swept away by the modes of material nature. And that's why Prabhupada mentions in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are two kinds of heroes in this world. One hero is the one who seems to be completely given to the process of sense gratification and very expert in it. And the other hero is the person who has completely mastered his or her senses and is able to withdraw the senses from sense objects to engage them in devotional service. That's the real hero. The other kind of hero is only a farcical hero, because that hero will be vanquished by the power of material nature. Old age makes a mockery of such a hero in this world. So while we have the opportunity, we should, by increments, practice giving to Krishna. And through knowledge, understanding that Krishna is the soul of our soul and the source of everything, and he's completely perfect and is supplying everything, we should, without hesitation, give to him. Do you buy that? You buying all this? Yeah? Why? Which part are you buying? Here's a microphone. Tell us what you bought.
Everything belongs to Krishna.
Why do you buy that?
Actually, I also had a similar experience like you had. My mom had a steel almirah, and she used to like really keep things locked up very nicely. Even if she was traveling, she would take the keys with her. And then when she died, you know, that day it struck me suddenly that, you know, that everything is just left behind. Something that she had guarded her whole life. Was just standing there, and she was, you know.
Yeah, profound.
It was very, very profound.
I thought of another one, and just this idea of not leaving things that can be used in Krishna's service. In other words, protecting them and leaving them, being a miser, and not engaging them with Krishna's service when one has the opportunity. And I heard a story from Satyadev Prabhu's wife, Mahaguna, who told me, about 10 years ago, a colleague of hers at, Senko, a colleague at, she works as she's a shiatsu therapist. So one of her colleagues was very frugal and saved money all the time. She was actually a miser.
She didn't make a lot of money,
but she saved a lot of money. She just salted it away and salted it away and she, you tell the story. Okay. She she put it all away, but then she got fatally ill. But even then, she wouldn't spend money on herself for any comfort at the end or anything like that. And as it turned out, she died with, what was it, $500,000 or something? $500,000. She made very little money, but she kept everything, and she didn't spend anything on herself. So she ended up with $500,000. And she also didn't have a will. And she was still a Japanese connected. Is it Japanese or American?
Japanese citizen.
So the law was. Now, here's the other part. She also was estranged from her relatives, especially from her brother and sister. I think her parents had already passed. And she didn't like them at all, her brother and sister. And according to Japanese law, when you don't have a will, whatever you leave behind, it goes to your siblings, if the parents aren't there, right? So she didn't spend any money on herself. She kept kept it, saved it her whole life. Then when she passed away, because she didn't have a will, all of that accumulated wealth went to the people she hated the most. This is a vivid example of, you know, and Ma Guna was thinking, of course, you know, if she had given it to her, she could have built a temple or something like that. You know, it's like, here's $500,000, build a temple. And on the other hand, those who do sacrifice their lives for the sake of, for instance, in Shastra it says building a temple for Vishnu, such a person is unlimitedly compensated in the next life. And also I've seen in this life, you know, a friend of mine is Guru Kripa, and he's famous for having gotten Prabhupada money when he needed it, basically. Because Prabhupada started with no money, and he wanted to build temples and start projects and things like that, and he didn't have any money. So Guru Kripa tells the story how one day he was in talking to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was saying, you know, I need money to build these projects and everything, and nobody's given me any money. And Guru Kripa said, I'll go get it for you, Prabhupada. And then after Guru Kripa said, after he walked out of the room, he thought, what did I just say? Where am I going to get any money? I don't have any money. So he started the very famous collecting party that was in Japan, of which Satyadeva Prabhu was a part of. And they collected there for many, many years in Japan, and they collected millions of dollars, and they gave it to Prabhupada, and they built temples. And now everyone, of course, everyone in that party is glorified for having done that. And but I know especially Guru Kripa, because when we travel together, people will recognize him that, you know, you built Vrindavan, you know, you built the Krishna Balaram Mandir. Of course, it was he and all this party. But he's famous even in this life for having built Krishna a temple. And what to speak of the next life, one time when he was feeling extreme anxiety from this austerity of staying in Japan and collecting, he went to Prabhupada in Vrindavan and said, I can't do this anymore. It's too difficult, too austere, so many things. There's no temple there, this and that. And Prabhupada said, Krishna has already built you a house in Goloka. I have seen it. Now go back to Japan. So when you give to Krishna, like Prabhupada's father used to tell him that when Krishna gives, he gives with 10 hands. And when he takes away with 10 hands. So we can't keep anything if we try anyway. So the smart thing to do, the transcendental thing to do, is as fast as possible, engage everything in Krishna's service before it gets left for the hated relatives or whomever will take it. It could be the government who will use it to, you know, fight more wars in Iraq or Afghanistan. Because by my karma, I'm a citizen of America, and if it, you know, one way or another, they'll figure out a way to take it. There's people get audited all the time, and then the government comes in and says, oh, by the way, that's our money now. And there's nothing you can do about it, practically. You can try to fight it, but it's a long, protracted process. I know people that's happened to.
I just had a friend in Hawaii.
Use the microphone.
Haribo, I just learned that a friend of mine in Hawaii who was had accumulated $250,000 in, I don't know where he was putting it, but I guess they have metal detectors or something, and some officer or something, FBI or something, came in and they found it all, and there's no way to get it back. How are you going to say, that's my money, please give it back? So instead of him spending it in a good service, which he had an inkling he should have done, he didn't do it and he lost it all. It's right after I left. That's very funny that would have happened that way. He's a very political activist, so he still regrets that, I suppose.
Well, Dravida Prabhu told me a story about a devotee who had made a software invention. And, I forget all the details, but the general point of it was that at one point he had some stock, and it went up, and he became a multimillionaire. And Dravida kept telling him, you know, you better just sell that and stop the whole thing. And he didn't do it, and then later on, the whole thing went back down to zero. And Prabhupada told that happened in real life. So on paper, he was a multimillionaire. And then a couple years later, as he didn't act on it, basically he lost everything. And Giriraj Maharaj told us that once when Prabhupada was speaking to some businessmen in Bombay, according to what they would particularly understand and appreciate, he told them that material life is like a man who calls into his stockbroker in the morning and places a buy order for some stock. And then by the afternoon, all the stock he picked just surges upward and he becomes a millionaire. And he's celebrating, all happy. He gets the word that his stock has gone up. And then at the end of the day, the stockbroker calls back and says, you know, the bad news is, however, that it went down at the end of the day and it went back to zero. And now you've lost everything. So Prabhupada said, this is the scenario of everyone's life. That doesn't matter what you accumulate on the material side in this lifetime, by the end it goes down to zero. You have to give it all back. That's kind of, it's almost cliche, you know. But nonetheless, I remain attached. And the cure, the remedy, is to hear and understand transcendental knowledge. And then also to act in that capacity, because when we give to Krishna, we become satisfied. And when we feel and understand that in giving, I actually receive, that starts the flow. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about how the foremost position, topmost position of a devotee is when he or she is always thinking of Krishna, simply engaged 24 hours a day in thinking and serving Krishna. And if one can't and isn't in that position, can't be or isn't in that position, he or she should practice to come to that position. We do sadhana bhakti, which means we practice this life of devotional service, of hearing and chanting, serving the deity. In fact, we serve the deity. Prabhupada once said that this is practice for going back to the spiritual world, because all the same things you do when you do deity worship, you're doing in the spiritual world. And Jnanivas in Mayapur had commented that Prabhupada told him that this is there's no difference for the pujari, there's no change of service for the pujari. So once he leaves his current position serving in this particular body, then in the next life he's still serving Krishna in the same capacity. So these kinds of activities we practice in devotional service in order to develop a spontaneous feeling for doing that. And Krishna says, if you can't do that, then you should give away the fruit of your work. And if you can't do that, he said, try to be charitable. Because the process of giving actually is what, that is the real flow of spiritual life. Because we're little units, little giving units actually. And when we try to keep it, when we try to take it for ourselves, then we become implicated. And there are all kinds of complications that come from that. So who to give to? That's a big question. Sometimes, you know, people give to all kinds of causes and charities one way or another and for different reasons. But the best person to give to is Krishna, because he's the supreme taker. He can take and take and take and take, and as soon as he takes it, it's distributed to everyone, just like the stomach. As soon as the stomach gets the food, then it passes it off to the brain and to the feet and to the hands and to every part of the body immediately. And when we give to Krishna, then all things become satisfied automatically. Just like, Krishna is so expert. Prabhupada, I heard him speaking today about how if you try to cheat Krishna, you'll be supremely cheated, because he's so expert at cheating. If you want to cheat him, he knows how to cheat you. Like, what? You're kidding me. How did this happen? You know, like Hiranyakashipu, he had everything wrapped up. And he wanted to cheat so badly that he invested all of his energies that he got from his austerities in figuring out how to cheat. And then Krishna just perfectly cheated him. And so we can either be perfectly cheated, or we can surrender to Krishna and know that we'll be perfectly taken care of. Yoga kshemam bahamyaham. Ananyas chintayantamam ye jana pariyupasate. Tesham nityabdiyuktanam yoga kshemam bahamyaham. If someone just gives themselves to Krishna and says, now I'll just place my consciousness in Krishna and put myself in his care completely. Ananyas, ananya means without any other consideration, no other alloy is included. It's unalloyed. Ananyas chintayantomam, my consciousness is in Krishna. Ye jana pariupasate. Tesham nityabdiyoktanam yogakshemam bahamyaham. Krishna says, such a person I personally carry what he lacks and preserves what he has. That's a natural condition of the soul in relationship with Krishna. And I've given that up. And now it says, Krishna is my supreme well-wisher and father, but I've given that up. And now I've taken shelter of Maya. And I get kicked over and over again. So Krishna consciousness is satisfying, but it requires a jump start. It's a pushing process. I have to jump start this process, begin the giving, and I also have to culture knowledge, sambandh again, of my relationship with Krishna. And when I understand he's the soul of my soul, by giving to him, everything else is satisfied. Then there's no stopping a person. When a person actually knows, this is my best, this is my self-interest. My self-interest is in doing devotional service. When there's some doubt about that, and I think, well, maybe I'm losing something. Maybe I need to have something else mixed into my devotional service in order to make sure that I don't miss anything in the material world. That's mixed devotional service. But unalloyed devotional service means that I don't need anything else. I only need devotional service. Shraddha shabde vishvas kahe surida nishchoy Krishna bhakti koila sarva karma krita hoy means that the devotee has firm faith that just by serving Krishna, everything else is taken care of. Don't have to do anything else. You all also said you were buying all this, so what is it you were buying? Barney, she's smiling, so she must have some realization.
No, I'm not ready yet.
Well, anyway, it's nice to see you enjoying Hare Krishna. So this verse, Satyadev Prabhu said a few weeks ago that this changed his whole direction in life when he heard this verse. Om Purnamada Purnamidam, the completeness of the Absolute includes everything. Everything emanates from him. What does it do for all of you, this one verse? Can you live in this verse? Yes? Want to say more about it? Any thought, realization, reflection from anything we've heard tonight? Any one thing that's stuck in your mind from the discussion?
Yeah, I mean, from the beginning, I mean, in my experience, like, I always feel like somebody is always, giving and taking. Because if I take my life, my personal experiences, like, I started my life, like, with very little, I don't know how to describe, but I had very less money when I started my life. And over a period of time, like, I'm gaining money, and I'm losing money, and gaining money, losing money. It's always money aspect in my life, basically. But some things are happening without my control, and some things are happening with my control. And because whenever I want to take control of my life, and it's not going in the direction where I want to go, and when I leave it like that, it's going in the right direction. So, I don't know, basically, I am in very engaged to, talk about all these things, but still, I feel like, there is some power. He's always driving everybody. And, it's basically like we have to believe that there is always a superpower that that is driving everybody, and we have to accept it and then follow the rules of the follow the laws of the nature. That means, I think, as you are saying today, like this is also one of the laws which we need to always follow. But you know, although we are following the laws of the nature, like there is always something, especially for me, I always miss something in my life. Okay, I get like, I want to own a car. Okay, I have the car. I want to get a job. I got a job. I wanted to study. I studied basically. But there is still always, I miss something. That completeness is not there.
Mm-hmm.
So,
nice point. I might just, these are really nice, interesting, very important points you're bringing up. Just it reminded me, one of my favorite lectures that Prabhupada gives on the Bhagavad Gita, Viparitani Keshava. Can you find that verse? It's in your first chapter, I think. You know that verse? Viparitani. Nimitani. Yeah, Viparitani. Nimitani Viparitani. So it means Arjuna is saying to Krishna on the battlefield that whatever I do, I'm getting the opposite. Right? Which is it? 1.30. Let's look at this verse. It relates to what you're saying. 1.30. Page 53. It's good to have a pundit in the front row. This verse is on page 53. And I'll say, please repeat. Nacha shoksh nom evasta tum brahmativa chame manaha nibitani cha pashyami viparitani keshava na nor cha also shaknomi am I able avastatum to stay brahmati forgetting eva as cha and me my manaha mind nimitani causes cha also pashyami I see viparitani just the opposite keshava O killer of the demon keshi Krishna. And here's the translation: I am now unable to stand here any longer. I am forgetting myself and my mind is reeling. I see only causes of misfortune, O Krishna, killer of the Keshi demon. Purport. Due to his impatience, Arjuna was unable to stay on the battlefield, and he was forgetting himself on account of this weakness of his mind. Excessive attachment for material things puts a man in such a bewildering condition of existence. Bhayam dvitiya binibeshita syat. Bhagavatam 11.2.37. Such fearfulness and loss of mental equilibrium take place in persons who are too affected by material conditions. Arjuna envisioned only painful reverses in the battlefield. He would not be happy even by gaining victory over the foe. The words nimitani viparitani are significant. When a man sees only frustration in his expectations, he thinks, why am I here? Everyone is interested in himself and his own welfare. No one is interested in the Supreme Self. Arjuna is showing ignorance of his real self-interest by Krishna's will. One's real self-interest lies in Vishnu or Krishna. The conditioned soul forgets this and therefore suffers material pains. Although Arjuna thought that his victory in the battle would only be a cause of lamentation for him. So Prabhupada gives a lecture on this verse and makes much of the words nimitani and viparitani. just the opposite. Viparitani means the opposite. So Prahlad Maharaj also says in his prayers that from time immemorial, everyone's been trying for a certain result in this material world. And since time immemorial, no one has been successful. So it's like in one of those game shows, they have, you know, like living entity zero, material nature, 1 trillion times 10, you know. So every time I try for some result, I get the opposite in material life. It's frustrating. And not only that, it appears to be a certain thing, but when I get it, it's something else. Like a friend of mine always wanted a certain kind of car. He was always dreaming about it when he was a young man, and then he got a good job and he got the car. And he admitted to me later that this fancy car that he got, the time that he enjoyed it the most was the day before he bought it. Because after that, it was just this hunk of metal that, you know, he was worried if it would be scratched. And, you know, the insurance was there, and he'd, like, park it outside, and he'd think those, you know, somebody's going to take it. And it was just anxiety, constant anxiety. And then, of course, it's a material thing. It just wears out. And then there's a new model that comes out the next year, and it's like, should have had that. I like those fins better on that one. So, isn't it? It's constant. It's accelerated nowadays because things change so fast. You know, somebody, you buy a Z phone and then, you know, XYZ. Then next thing, you know, there's a Z1 and it's in new and improved and you could have had that and it's cheaper. So there's this constant turning of events in material nature and also a feeling of dissatisfaction. That's why this verse is so important. Om Purnam. Just the first two words. Purnam. Om Purnam. The supreme is completely perfect. And if I repose my consciousness in him, in the complete person who has all potencies, I'll feel satisfied. That's the process of spiritual life. It just means to repose my consciousness in the Purnam, the completely perfect person, because everything else is imperfect. And that's anything that's imperfect that I repose my consciousness or my faith in, it'll leave me feeling unsatisfied. And it'll make me feel like I got the opposite of what I actually came for. Whereas spiritual life, described later on by Krishna, yam labham chaparam labham, he says, when you approach the Supreme, you feel, I've gotten something where there's no greater gain. Do you ever feel like that? You were just expressing the opposite. Whatever you get, there was something else you could have had that would have been better. It's not enough. But when we approach the Supreme, when we repose our consciousness and our energy in the Supreme, then we feel that there is no greater gain. It's a complete fullness. And there's fear also. Prabhupada quotes the verse, Bhayam Dvitiya Binibeshita Syad. When I try to separate things, this is for me, that is for others, then there's fear. Because I've made a dichotomy that something's for me. And trying to take care and protect myself and my things is a first of all, it's a futile endeavor because you can't. And second of all, it takes all our energy. In fact, I think we could argue successfully, this is what material life is all about. It's wrangling how to take care of what I think I own. And there's fearfulness in that. Especially because there's a gnawing feeling that no matter what I do, I'm going to lose it anyway. Isn't it? Hari Rama?
Hari Rama. Does that include your mind?
What?
That somehow you've been, the society wants you to have a certain mind kind of thinking and stuff and... It's not really a true. So if you lose it, you fear you're going to lose your mind, but it's not even something worth to have.
Satya?
I mean, as society tells you to think like this, like that, all the conceptions of you are your body, this and that, like that. So.
Am I commenting on his comment?
I was hoping.
I agree with you. The mind is really it's part of the material machine. Right? Krishna calls this a machine, that we're in a machine. Iswara sarvabhutanam hride share junatishtati brahmayan sarvabhutani yantra arudani mayaya. So the soul, the consciousness is in this machine of the material body, which includes the mind. The mind is part of that machine. He says, mamai vamso jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana manasashtan indriyani prakritirshtani karshati, that this machine is made of the five senses, which includes the mind or the sixth sense. And so we're viewing this world and we're viewing ourself even through this. We're looking into this machine, we're looking into the mind and the senses, thinking that this is me. And we're experiencing everything through this filter of the mind and the senses, and therefore we feel incomplete. The consciousness is never separate. Krishna is the soul of all souls, so our consciousness, our very life, is coming from the source of all consciousness, Krishna. So there's not separation, but when we look at ourselves in terms of the mind, you know, when we hear things, when we see things, even when we hear this philosophy, if we're just experiencing it through the mind, then there's this separation. It's like there's the bottle and there's the honey inside, and we're licking that bottle, trying to taste the honey, but we never quite get it because, you know, we're licking the bottle, we're not tasting the honey. And so, in that sense, the mind is... the mind is what's causing us to feel separate and thinking that we're the body and feeling that we're separated from Krishna. And it's kind of interfering with our direct experience of who we are in our relationship with the Lord. So Krishna says to Arjuna to become atmavan, that one should give up worrying about gain and safety, because that's part of the mind. The mind worries about things, projects things. And so as long as we're worrying and we're hankering, then we're not in touch with ourselves and our relationship with Krishna, and therefore we feel incomplete. But this verse, Om Purnamada Purnamidam, says that when we reconnect... we're always connected, but when we wake up to the fact that we're connected through giving, by acknowledging the Supreme Lord as the source of our life, then we feel complete. And I like this one statement by Lao Tzu. He was a Chinese philosopher. He says that one who feels he has enough will always have enough. And one who feels he doesn't have enough will never have enough, and no matter how much you get. And so when we feel connected with Krishna, we feel like I have enough. There's nothing to worry about. The world is friendly, and the devotee is just full of gratitude. He's seeing how Krishna is supporting him in every way. So... he feels like he has enough. But one who is not aware of that, who's just looking through things through the mind and through the false self, then he'll never feel that completeness. Even though he's complete, he's just forgotten it. So the mind can be our best friend or our worst enemy.
A verse from the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is that's related. There are many verses, actually, but one that sticks in my mind often. Naprasrishyat priyam prapya nodvijat prapya chapriyam sthira buddhira sammudho brahmavid brahmanistitaha. So Krishna talks about priya and apriya. So priya means dear. There are certain things in this world that because of my mind, the conditioning of my mind, I consider them to be dear. And other things I consider to be not dear. That they're things that I try to avoid. And we can notice with profit that people all over the world have a different set of ideas about what's dear and not dear. Prabhupada brought up this vivid example. Some of his godbrothers had gone to preach in, not Malaysia, what is that country? In Southeast Asia, huh?
Cambodia.
They had gone to Cambodia to preach, and they would hold programs, and during the programs they would get ghee and they would cook puris and things like that. And the smell of the ghee was objectionable, very objectionable to the neighbors and people around because they were in a lower mode and they didn't appreciate the smell of ghee. Whereas in that local custom, they had a preparation called nafi. And nafi was something where they would collect all kinds of creatures, bugs and things like that, and they'd put it in a pot. And they'd leave the pot sitting for years, actually, until it would ferment. You know, all these little crawly things that would ferment in there, and then they'd strain it, and it would become this black liquid. And then on festival days, they would take this fermented goo, you know, that had fermented bugs that smelled terrible, you know, this fermented bugs, and they relished that. So for them, that was dear. And for someone else, you know, something else is dear. So from the viewpoint of the mind, these things can be adjusted even in a life, in, you know, the mind is constantly churning. For instance, when I'm a child, I consider my toys to be very dear. And I can remember having, you know, some stuffed animals that I used to fight with my brother about, you know, and I had to bring it with me or something like that. And later on, what do I care for a stuffed animal? If someone offers me that in exchange for maybe, you know, working for a month at my job, if I had one, would I take that as payment? As a kid, I would consider that to be, you know, ample compensation. So the mind shifts according to circumstance. It's, and to one who's sthira buddhira and who's brahmavid, who understands the steadiness of Brahman and whose mind has become situated in Brahman, one's intelligence, that person doesn't... now the verse says that na prahrishyat. Prahrishyat means that one becomes joyful when getting something that's so-called dear. And now udvijet means he shudders when he gets something that's apriyam, that's not dear. And so the pursuit of material life really is about this, of trying to get things that my mind considers dear and trying to avoid the things which are not dear. And if the things that are not dear come to me, then I shudder. And if I finally get the things that I think are dear to me now, then I rejoice and I become happy. But a person who is sthira buddhira, he's steady intelligence, na prahrishyat priyam prapya, if he gets something that's dear, he doesn't rejoice. And if he gets something apriyam, he doesn't shudder. Either way, because he sees it, it's the same kinds of things just being churned and the mind's observing it in a certain way and taking it on the transcendental platform. He sees that these things are only the modes of material nature working. They're not connected to me. In fact, Krishna in the same chapter talks about a person who has become even detached from the body. And he says, naiva kinshit karomiti. Not at any time does he identify with all the activities of the body. Paschan, Shrinban, Sprisan, Jigran, Ashnan, Gatshan, Swapan, Swasan. He's describing all the activities that one would go through throughout the day of receiving, giving, evacuating, eating, moving about, breathing, and all these kinds of things. The person realizes, just as Satyadeva Prabhu was saying, that only the machine is acting. I'm not acting. And in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada tells us we should observe this process in ourselves. We should actually take time to introspect and see how the body's moving, and not just blindly go along with it and think, this is me. Do you know how many hairs you have on your head? Do you have any idea?
Not as many as before.
And we don't even know why that happens, and we have no control over it. But we can't count the number of hairs on our head. If you employed the scientific staff at Stanford to try to count how many hairs on your head, they would fail. How many leaves on a tree? So anyway, in the body, I once saw a film when I was in high school, I think, and it was about this couple. They were getting ready to go out for the evening. And it was a biology class. And so, you know, the woman had this long flowing hair and she was combing it, you know, in the mirror and putting on makeup and stuff. And so the narrator would say, here's a woman with beautiful hair. Now let's take a closer look. And then then they had some special photography where they actually go inside the microscope, you know, and they'd see the hair follicles. And there's all kinds of living beings in there that, you know, that come out of the hole and the, you know, that live in there. And, you know, when you look really close to a scalp or something like that, and you think of all the fuss that everyone makes over hair, what to speak of nails? I mean, don't get me started, because when we started going shop to shop, I realized that, you know, what's keeping the economy going is it's not oil. It's nail salons. Everywhere in the world, you know, everyone goes to nail salons. They pay a lot of money to sit there and breathe toxic fumes for a few hours and get these nails done. But if you look really carefully, you know, what's in a nail and what's the polish and all that kind of stuff, you'll have a different perspective if you go really close. And then, you know, they showed the guy and he was, you know, a handsome guy and stuff like that. And then I think he, you know, he put on some aftershave lotion or something. And said, let's take a closer look. And you know, as soon as they get close, and, you know, everyone in the audience goes, ew! But that's the mind, because the mind sees, you know, what material nature is doing and then projects something onto it and thinks this is pleasing and something else is unpleasing. But for one, sthira bhutira sammudho, doesn't shudder and doesn't rejoice in these pleasing or non-pleasing, so-called pleasing or non-pleasing items or events in one's life. This is the steadiness of Brahman consciousness. So one must be sthira buddhir. One must be situated steadily. The intelligence can't be flickering over accepting and rejecting these kinds of things. Why? Om purnamada purnamidam. Purnat purnamudachate. Purnasya purnamadaya purnameva vishishite. The person is seeing all these things are coming from Krishna. They're being maintained by Krishna. Therefore, he's not repulsed by them, and he's not overly joyed upon attaining something in that condition. His joy is later described in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, antarsukontararamas. Antarsuk. Anta means within, and suk means happiness. Antarsukotararamas. All his happiness is coming from within. Antar sukartararamas. Tatantir jyotirevaha. His aim is inward. He's aiming inwardly and finding the happiness that comes from within. Cliche, isn't it? Happiness comes from within. But who's actually doing that or experiencing it? Finding that actual equilibrium and satisfaction, you know, within one's heart. Prabhupada argues throughout the Bhagavad Gita as it is, This, especially in this age of Kali Yuga, must be attained through devotional service. And Krishna says the same thing in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, sannyas karma yoga. You have to have yoga in action, because if you just have it theoretically, he tells Arjuna, if you just take jnana, knowledge, and you meditate that I'm not my body, and you don't have actual activity throughout your life to engage your hands, your feet, your ears, your eyes, and nose in karma sannyas, means activity that's renunciation at the same time, then you won't be successful. You'll fall down from the position. But if you engage all your senses, your eyes, your ears, your nose, everything, your intention in devotional service, by knowing this verse, Om Purnamada Purnamada, that Krishna is the source of everything, then antar sukontara ramas, then you get this antar suk, inner happiness. There's no replacement for that. If you don't have that, you have to go for the external. You have to. You're forced. There's no other way. Great yogis fall for it again and again. And it's not that one should feel oneself, you know, stupid if that happens. Because Krishna says over and over again in the Bhagavad Gita and in other shastras that even highly intelligent, educated people, educated in the spiritual science, they fall for it over and over again. So you have to have antarsukh. You have to feel satisfaction. And the verse Prabhupada invoked, bhayam dvitiya binibeshitasya. No, that's not it. The other one. Bhakti parishanu bhavu viraktir anyatra traisa trika eka kala. You have to, like when you're eating food and you feel satisfied and you say, no more, I'm not hungry anymore. You know for yourself. You have to have that in order to overcome the pushings of the mind, the antarsukh. Antarsukhantararamas.
When we say happiness is within and one is rejoicing within, literally one is not turning inward as such. Means when I heard you say you engage in devotional service, that is attention on Krishna who is out there, one is getting happiness within. So one is not as such turning within or concentrating or focusing within oneself, that there is something there, maybe the super soul or the soul in the heart, but one is doing devotional service to Krishna and it is coming from within. Is that what exactly it is?
Well, earlier I had mentioned a verse and purport in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam in which Prabhupada actually gives us a preliminary exercise for doing just that, looking within, introspecting. And it is important. And in this verse and purport, Prabhupada takes us through a step-by-step process of observing that we're not the body. In other words, one step-by-step isolating the body, the mind, the intelligence, and seeing that we're separate from that. So that's also not a futile exercise. You know, to observe that we're different. But what I was saying is that that's not enough. It's important, but it's also, there has to be follow-up to that. And because the waves of material nature keep coming. There's a famous verse, which is actually, Prabhupada quotes it here in the purport. To the fifth canto, to the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And this verse is from the Srimad Bhagavatam. I'm stalling. Here it is. Look in Bhagavad Gita 5:26. And may I please have a fourth canto? Fourth canto, 22nd chapter. So, this verse, I'll say it, then please repeat. Kama krodha vimuktanam yatinam yatachetasam apito brahma nirvanam Vartate viditatmanam. Translation, those who are free from anger and all material desires, who are self-realized, self-disciplined, and constantly endeavoring for perfection, are assured of liberation in the Supreme in the very near future. And in the purport, Prabhupada quotes 422.39, and the verse is spoken by Maharaj Prithu. It was an incarnation of the Lord. And it goes as follows. Famous verse. Yat pada pankacha palasha vilasa bhaktya karmashayam gratitam udgatayanti santa tadvanna rikta matayo yatayo pirudha sroto ganastam aranam pajavasudevam. I'll read the word for word because you don't have it in your purport. Yet, whose? Pada, feet. Pankaja, lotus. Palasha, petals or toes. Vilasa, enjoyment. Bhaktya, by devotional service. Karma, fruit of activities. Ashayam, desire. Gratitam, Hard not. Udgrantayanti. Root out. Santaha. Devotees. Tat. That. Vat. Like. Na. Never. Rikta. Increasingly trying. Upi. Even though. Rudha. Stopped. Srotagana. The waves of sense enjoyment. Tum. Unto him. Aranam. Worthy to take shelter. Bhaja. Engaged in devotional service. Vasudevam. Unto Krishna. The son of Vasudev. Translation. The devotees who are always engaged in the service of the toes of the lotus feet of the Lord can very easily overcome hard-knotted desires for fruit of activities. Because this is very difficult, the non-devotees, the jnanis and yogis, although trying to stop the waves of sense gratification, cannot do so. Therefore, you are advised to engage in the devotional service of Krishna, the son of Vasudev. Purport. There are three kinds of transcendentalists trying to overcome the influence of the modes of material nature, the jnanis, yogis, and bhaktas. All of them attempt to overcome the influence of the senses, which is compared to the incessant waves of a river. The waves of a river flow incessantly, and it is very difficult to stop them. Similarly, the waves of desire for material enjoyment are so strong that it cannot be stopped by any process other than bhakti yoga. The bhaktas, by their transcendental devotional service unto the lotus feet of the Lord, become so overwhelmed with transcendental bliss that automatically their desires for material enjoyment stop. The jnanis and yogis, who are not attached to the lotus feet of the Lord, simply struggle against the waves of desire. They are described in this verse as rikta mataya, which means devoid of devotional service. In other words, the jnanis and yogis, although trying to be free from the desires of material activities, actually become more and more entangled in false philosophical speculation or strenuous attempts to stop the activities of the senses. As stated previously, Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janayat Yashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayarahaitukam. Here also the same point is stressed. Bhaja Vasudevam indicates that one who is engaged in the loving service of Krishna, the son of Vasudev, can very easily stop the waves of desires. As long as one continues to try to artificially stop the waves of desires, he will certainly be defeated. That is indicated in this verse. Desires for fruit of activities are strongly rooted, but the trees of desire can be uprooted completely by devotional service because devotional service employs superior desire. One can give up inferior desires when engaged in superior desires. To try to stop desire desires is impossible. One has to desire the Supreme in order not to be entangled in inferior desires. Jnanis maintain a desire to become one with the Supreme, but such desire is also considered to be kama, lust. Similarly, the yogis desire mystic power, and that is also kama. And the bhaktas, not being desirous of any sort of material enjoyment, become purified. There is no artificial attempt to stop desire. Desire becomes a source of spiritual enjoyment under the protection of the toes of the feet of the Lord. It is stated herein by the Kumaras that the lotus feet of Lord Krishna are the ultimate reservoir of all pleasure. One should therefore take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord instead of trying unsuccessfully to stop desires for material enjoyment. As long as one is unable to stop the desire for material enjoyment, there's no possibility of becoming liberated from the entanglement of material existence. It may be argued that the waves of a river are incessantly flowing and that they cannot be stopped, but the waves of the river flow toward the sea. When the tide comes over the river, it overwhelms the flowing of the river, and the river itself becomes overflooded, and the waves from the sea become more prominent than the waves from the river. Similarly, a devotee with intelligence plans so many things for the Lord's, for the service of the Lord in Krishna consciousness, that stagnant material desires become overflooded by the desire to serve the Lord. I'm going to read that last sentence again because it's key. Similarly, a devotee with intelligence plans so many things for the service of the Lord in Krishna consciousness that stagnant material desires become overflooded by the desire to serve the Lord. Hansapriya, you want to comment on that? Planning so many things for the service of the Lord? It's like when you get ready for a festival or something, right? We've seen you running around with a walkie-talkie. That's yoga. Any comment? A devotee with intelligence plans so many things for the service of the Lord in Krishna consciousness that stagnant material desires become overflooded by the desire to serve the Lord. That's key because it's a very practical thing. There's two kinds of plans. You can plan for your maintenance in the material world, or you can plan to serve Krishna. And I've seen, when I look back, the early days of the Krishna consciousness movement, how people would come and basically give up everything to sleep on the floor and just engage 24 hours a day in this plan to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. And in this way, all their senses are engaged. In any of the activities where we're making plans for spreading Krishna consciousness, those overcome the other plans that we have in our life. So in other words, we can become entangled in the material world, or we become entangled in Vrindavan. So we want to become entangled in spiritual life. And actually, there's lots of entanglement to be had, especially in the service of spreading a mission. So Prabhupada stressed it so much. He didn't encourage us to go off and sit and try to become self-realized through sitting for long periods of time and meditating or chanting and things like that. Of course, the chanting has to be there. We should have a robust program for hearing and chanting every day. But we should also have many, many plans to execute as soon as we stop our chanting. Because the minute we don't have a plan for spreading Krishna consciousness or for advancing, especially for spreading Krishna consciousness, the mission, then other plans will come in. The phone will ring and someone will say, hey, can you bring your truck over? And I got to use this. And, can you help me out? It's like, unless your life is so filled up with your plans for spreading Krishna consciousness, you'll succumb to other plans because everyone's got a plan for you. Maya's got a plan for us. If we don't have a superior plan, Maya will implement her plan. So taking Krishna's plan and Lord Chaitanya's idea to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, that's a big plan. You can really make a lot of plans around that, right? Like if Virendra Kumar Prabhu was going to just figure out how to spread Krishna consciousness all over San Jose. And then he quit his job. He did everything. He just figured, not that you have to quit your job, but say he got so into planning this whole thing that he decided this is all I'm going to do is just figure out how to spread it in Santa Clara County. He'd have a lot going on. And probably, too, if he did, people would come forward seeing that that was the plan he was executing, that was he did, and everyone would try to support him. That's what happened with Prabhupada. His plan was to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, and he came to America with no resources, and people came forward to help him, you know, to fulfill his plan. So I really like this sentence. A devotee with intelligence plans so many things for the service of the Lord in Krishna consciousness that stagnant material desires become overflooded by the desire to serve the Lord. Overflooded. As confirmed by Jamunacharya, since he has been entangled in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord, there is always a current of newer and newer desires flowing to serve the Lord, so much so that the stagnant desire of sex life becomes very insignificant. Jamunacharya even says that he spits on such desires. Bhagavad Gita 2:59 also confirms param drishva nivartate. The conclusion is that by developing a loving desire for the service of the lotus feet of the Lord, we subdue all material desires for sense gratification. So antarsukh means, you know, we also, it's not that we're not introspective, but we also have our bodily motion, and the mind has to be engaged. And King Ambarish was an example that Prabhupada gives over and over again from the Srimad Bhagavatam. He was a king. Kings have many duties and they have many possessions, but he engaged all of those in Krishna's service, and therefore he's noted that it is noted in the Bhagavatam that he was expert at engaging everything and all of his senses all the time in Krishna's service.
What's the significance of using the word stagnant for the material desires? Is it because they are there for since so many births and they don't go away?
Yeah, she was saying that why does Prabhupada use the words stagnant in reference to material desires? And my sense of that is similar to what Prahlad Maharaj mentioned when he talked about material life. He said, punak punak charvita charvananam. That chewing that which has already been chewed. In other words, could we look up stagnant, please? I want to have an exact definition. We don't have our... Bhakti Jonathan is not here. I've been looking up far fewer words since Bhakti Jonathan hasn't been here.
Stagnant is like the oil spill, just floating there in the middle of wherever it is. It's not moving.
Okay, if those exact words come out of this definition and it mentions the oil spill, I'm going to give you $1,000,000. Stagnant. So stagnant material desires, stagnated, stagnation. We'll just find out the origin of this word stagnant and the etymology behind it. But punak punas charvita charvananam, chewing that which has already been chewed. It's already been done. In fact, there was a song I remember from my childhood that it's all been done and more. I think it was George Harrison sang about material life. He's saying it's all been done and more. It's like, and too much is not enough. Too much is not enough, and it's all been done and more. And you know, all these sounds outside here, you have to expect that wherever you go in Kali Yuga. As I mentioned in a couple of previous classes, that one way to have a satisfaction in your mind amidst these kinds of distractions is to lower your expectations. Because if I expect that I'm going to sit here in the middle of San Jose and have some kind of peace, then I'll be actually agitated by the sound of that music outside. And another example of how the mind, the pleasing and unpleasing things are subjective, I heard many, many years ago an interview with a music aficionado. She was she used to review classical music, and she was admittedly a snob when it came to music. You know, certain kinds of music was music, and the other kind was just garbage. And she had a near-death experience, almost left her body, and I don't remember how. She might have had a heart attack, or she was electrocuted, or something like that. But she had a near-death experience. She actually left her body and came back in. Satyadeva Prabhu has told us many times about, in his experience and profession as a paramedic, he saw many people who were technically dead, and then they came back to life, and they had all kinds of experiences. Anyway, she had this near-death experience, and when she came back, she wrote a book, and in the book, she talked about how, after that experience, even elevator music sounded good. You know, she just appreciated it. Have you ever had that experience? Like, say, you know, you take a place for granted, and then you, say you get lost in a city. You think, oh, this, you know, normal place, or you start complaining, thinking about how, you know, things aren't good enough. Then you get lost, and you have this think like, maybe I'll never make it back, but then you do. Then you appreciate everything. So the mind is tricky like that. And material nature arranges and rearranges within different kinds of, through different kinds of combinations and permutations. It's actually just three things: goodness, passion, and ignorance. But Krishna says in the Gita, it mixes and through combinations, permutations, it looks like a different thing. And constantly, whenever I take it, I think, here it is. And then it becomes old. It stagnates, right? And then I think, it's over here. Material nature says, now it's over here. And I go over there, and I go, now I've got it. And I get that, and then that stagnates. And let's see what stagnates means. Stagecoach. Stagnate. Stag. Huh? Stag. Where? Stagnate. Okay. Stagnate, stagnated. To be or becomes stagnant. Don't worry, there's more. Oil spill. Okay. Two, to fail to progress or develop. From the Latin, stagnare, stagnat, stagnum, swamp. Hey, that's nice. It's a swamp. To fail to develop, it languishes, it sits, it doesn't develop. Stagnation. So material desires are stagnant, and chewing that which has already been chewed. It's already been done, it's already tried in different, material nature presents it in a different combination or permutation. You know, one young couple is selling their house because, you know, they're divorcing and they're unhappy and they've been miserable. And another couple comes in and says, oh, this is my dream house. And we're gonna live and be happy here. Same place, but, you know, it's observed because of the situation of the mind and how I'm reflecting and seeing the material nature in a certain way. No press release yet.
In the third chapter of the Gita, the last two verses, before that, Arjuna asks Krishna, what is it that impels one to act, even though he doesn't want to? And Krishna says that's lust. So lust is basically material desires. And so Krishna's remedy for material desires is given in the last two verses. He says that one needs to directly see that one is not the mind or the body. And the way one can directly see that is by turning one's awareness back in towards itself. And so, you know, devotional service is much superior to the path of jnana, because the jnanis have no practical engagement for their body or for their mind. But having said that, we see also that many people engage in devotional service and give it up. and they don't attain that higher taste and they go back to the lower taste, it is possible to engage in devotional service kind of in an external way where one has never focused within, never had the experience of the self, because one's attention is always on the mind and the senses. So if one is engaging in devotional service like that, then it's compared that one is always covered by clouds and mist, and that the experience of that light doesn't come through. So I kind of like to balance out both sides there.
Can I have first canto, please?
That happiness is inward, it's coming from within. Are we actually turning within to get the happiness? Literally. Yes. And so if we are turning within, what are we turning to? Are we turning to the self, self, which is a part and parcel of Krishna? There is also Krishna there, which is the super soul in the heart. But then there is Krishna, the Bhagwan personality, when the reference was made, that turn to his lotus feet. So we are turning to Krishna, to the lotus feet of Krishna. It would seem that that is an external relationship. And one other elaboration would be that when we say the Mayavadis are talking about merger, you merge with Brahman, but that Bhagavata philosophy says, no, we are engaged in an eternal relationship with Krishna. There is the devotee is there and Krishna is there. There is the identity maintained and there is eternal devotional service going on. Is that an inward relationship or an external relationship? I come to the temple and I chant and I worship the Lord who is there. And I worship his lotus feet. I'm engaged in, it would seem, an external relationship rather than literally turning inward. This is exactly the point that was being made.
So I say it's both. Because internally, our life is coming from Krishna. There's no separation. And so he's there as a super soul. He's also there as Bhagavan. But also, at the same time, because we're simultaneously one and different. So both is there. Therefore, we can also engage in the service of the Lord. We can use our body, we can use our mind, and we can also use our heart or our soul, our consciousness, in the service of the Lord. And both is there. Both is required. That experience is required.
The activities of devotional service, although they may appear to be externalized, Hrishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam, it's described by Rupa Goswami, Hrishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchite, that we're actually serving, when we are engaging our senses, our external senses, for instance, our vision in seeing, as you said, you come and see the lotus feet of the Lord. How do you see? How do you see anyway in this world? You see because of the sun. If the sun's not there, you won't be able to see. Our seeing is completely dependent on the sun. The minute it's completely dark, you can't see anything. And so our seeing is dependent on Krishna, actually. And our senses are actually Krishna's. They belong to Krishna. So we say, Hrishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam. We're engaging our senses in the service of the master of the senses, Hrishik Isha, in the master of the senses. So when we do that, we actually have an internal experience. And this is confirmed in the story of the wives of the Brahmins who were performing sacrifice. When they came out to serve Krishna, which you could say, they externalized, but they cooked for Krishna and they brought it out to him in the forest with great eagerness. When they saw Krishna externally, they embraced him within their heart. They actually embraced spiritually within the heart because they didn't go physically and embrace him. but they embraced within the heart. The activities of performing, for instance, artik, all of these items that we're offering, they when we're meditating on them and what they are, they're actually bringing us to an internal level. So by engaging our senses, iha yasya harer dasya karmana manasa gira nikila apyavastastu jivan muktasu uchite. It's described in Shastra that by engaging our external senses in the service of Krishna, we actually become liberated. How is that? We're liberated souls and we're experiencing something internally by engaging in devotional service. So one gets the internal experience by engaging in this sadhana bhakti. One comes to a higher level of actually experiencing a taste for performing the activity. Why? Because Krishna is there within the heart. Tesham ivanukam partam aham agyana jamdamaha nashayam yatma bhavasto gyana dipena bhashvata. He says himself in the Bhagavad Gita, when one engages in devotional service, then he illuminates the heart. He's there within the heart, and he says he illuminates. And the taste that one gets in devotional service, even if it's given up, is never lost. So Narada Muni says, Tyakvasa dharmam charanam bhujam harer bhajam apakvo tapatet toyadi. Obviously, this happens. Otherwise, Narada Muni wouldn't mention that people take to devotional service and then they give it up again. Because he says, if someone gives up all their occupational engagements to take to devotional service, but they're apakva, they're not ripe, they do it out of sentiment and they give it up, that they gain something invaluable that is never lost. And then later on, a few verses later, Narada says, Navayajano jatu katanchanan vrajan mukunda sev yan yavanat angrasam sritim smanam mukundang rupa guhanam punar vihatamichen narasa gahojana. My dear Vyas, even though a devotee of Lord Krishna sometimes falls down somehow or other, he certainly does not undergo material existence like others, fruit of workers, etc. Because a person who has once relished the taste of the lotus feet of the Lord can do nothing but remember that ecstasy again and again. So, if someone's immature and they take to devotional service and they get some taste, and this taste can be had in a very neophyte stage, in a very beginning stage, this kind of taste from devotional service, because devotional service engages the external senses and it gives an internal experience. That's explained by Kapiladeva in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where he describes how the Kanishta Adhikari, who only sees Krishna in the temple, he doesn't see all living entities as Krishna's parts and parcels. He doesn't see Krishna's with the heart of all living entities, but he just comes to the temple for the first time even and walks in and smells the incense and sees the deity. Even if he doesn't know what it is exactly, he becomes imperceptibly liberated and he experiences some happiness from seeing the Lord. That's a taste in devotional service that he internalizes, and that is because of Krishna's impetus within the heart. So sadhana bhakti means specifically to engage the external senses in the service of the Lord, and from properly engaging in the process of sadhana bhakti, one gets an internal experience. But yes.
So I have just a small comment on this. Isn't this just what you said, that for the happiness we have to look inwards, since because our relation with the super soul and the Bhagwan is through accepting that we are not the body and we are the soul, and so the senses and everything is just a machine. So if we have accepted that we are not the body and we are the soul, then we are kind of progressing in the spiritual life, and hence this could be obtained only if we look inwards. So the climbing of the staircase starts with looking inwards, and then we are progressing, and then we are using just this machine for the service of the Lord. So actually, it all started with looking inwards. So I just had a.
Could be, but it's not stereotype, because there are plenty of people who are completely ignorant of their external. They're not yogis. Queen Kunti says this in her prayers to Krishna. She says there are people who are not transcendentalists, who have no capacity to look within. They're not paramahamsas, and they're not accomplished in jnana or yoga or anything like that. But she says, what are they to do? What are those people to do? But then she talks about how devotional service is so pleasing that actually, you know, even if so, there are so many instances of you know, people who are. Brought to Krishna in many, many different ways. It's not that there's a you know, an exact stereotype way that one comes to Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna. So which came first, the experience of that I'm not my body, or the experience of, you know, that I'm the experience of devotional service externally? This, what I'm saying, is not stereotype, because, for instance, in his prayer, Rupa Goswami says that if someone hears the holy name of the Lord chanted, even if he doesn't know what it is or has no... and is completely blind and ignorant. In other words, they're not engaged in devotional service, or they're not engaged in any kind of self-realization. It can awaken in them the inkling for bhakti. And when one takes to bhakti, Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita, Janayat Yashu Vairagyam Gyanam Chayara Haitukam, the byproduct of that is that one becomes detached and one gets knowledge. Knowledge means looking inward, seeing I'm not my body. It's concomitant. Yes.
So one more thing that came to my mind was when we say happiness is within, it could also mean that that we are, that all our desires are inwards and we don't have any external desires. So the happiness that is coming, it's not coming from material objects, but it's just coming from, you know, from having some pleasure in your mind, right? Like thinking about Krishna or thinking the pastimes of Krishna. So that kind of pleasure and like not necessarily external pleasure coming from desire for material objects.
Yeah, that's also in the fifth chapter of the Gita. Krishna says, "Yehi sam sparshaja bhoga dukhayonai evate." This is 5:22. An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery which are due to contact with the material senses. O son of Kunti, such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and so the wise man does not take, does not delight in them. And he also talks about, bhaya sparshe susaktatman, just before that in 21. Bhaya sparshe means in external sense pleasure. So he makes a distinction between those who are experiencing inner happiness and what you're calling, you know, sort of this external happiness, which Krishna says is sparsheshu. It means it's because of contact with the senses and their objects. And so bhaya sparsheshu saktatma. He's the self-realized person's not attached to the external sense pleasures, but he's a sakta atma, but he enjoys within. Vindit Yatmani Yat Sukham, his happiness is within. So he makes a distinction between external happiness and that he's experiencing happiness within. And in one of these verses, Srila Prabhupada quotes the verse in the purport, Ramate Yogino Anante Satyananda Chidatmani, that the transcendentalists, they're experiencing happiness within, and therefore one of Krishna's names is Rama, because he gives that pleasure from within the heart of the devotee. So definitely the distinction is there between internal and external happiness. And an intelligent person doesn't take pleasure in external sense pleasure because he knows it has a beginning and an end. And anything that has a beginning and an end is not attractive to a transcendentalist, because there's a superior kind of happiness.
I think one of the things that comes out from this discussion is that engaging external senses after sense objects gives you this fleeting type of happiness, which is sense gratification. But the same senses engaged in the devotional service of Krishna or connecting to Rishikesh gives you that inward happiness.
Yeah, that's why it looks like somebody is doing the same thing, like fighting a war or engaging in cooking or something like that. Is two people standing side by side, they're doing the same thing. But one is doing it with the purpose of pleasing Krishna and therefore is experiencing inner happiness, and the other person is doing it for himself. And therefore his mind is agitated and not happy. No antar suk.
Same, like I was just, when all this pleasure, this nursing arti, pralad alad, the pleasure of Pralad Maharaj. So, that's where, that's the true, when I was looking at your definition, I actually didn't thought these, like, what is pleasure? So it's so intense, the pleasure of Pralad Maharaj. What is that pleasure? We are seeking for pleasure outside. When, it has been told what is the real pleasure. What is actually giving pleasure to Pralad Maharaj? Nothing. So, we, and we are looking outward manipulations, adjustments for pleasure. Still not there, but
so, yeah. Will you finish?
I want to offer something to support. What's your name,
brother? Himanshu.
I just want to offer some scriptural support of what you just said. So I'd like to look in chapter 13, verse 35, purport. I read this every day for the month of Purushottam.
The purport or the whole chapter?
Well, the whole chapter, but especially I focus on this verse in this purport. Would you like to read it?
Yeah, verse 35 and the purport.
Shetra Shetra Nyur Evam
Evam
Antaram Jnana Chakshusha
Antaram Jnana Chakshusha
Bhuta Prakriti Moksham Cha
Bhuta Prakriti Moksham Cha
Ye Vidur Yanti Te Param
Ye Vidur Yanti Te Param.
Translation: those who see with eyes of knowledge the difference between the body and the knower of the body, and can also understand the process of liberation from bondage in material nature, attain to the supreme goal. Purport: the purport of this 13th chapter is that one should know the distinction between the body, the owner of the body, and the super soul. One should recognize the process of liberation as described in verse 8 through 12. Then one can go on to the supreme destination. A faithful person should at first have some good association to hear of God and thus gradually become enlightened. If one accepts a spiritual master, one can learn to distinguish between matter and spirit, and that becomes the stepping stone for further spiritual realization. A spiritual master, by various instructions, teaches his students to get free from the material concept of life. For instance, in Bhagavad Gita, we find Krishna instructing Arjuna to free him from materialistic considerations. One can understand that this body is matter. It can be analyzed with its 24 elements. The body is the gross manifestation, and the subtle manifestation is the mind and psychological effects. And the symptoms of life are the interaction of these features. But over and above this, there is the soul and there is also the super soul. The soul and the super soul are two. This material world is working by the conjunction of the soul and 24 material elements. One who can see the constitution of the whole material manifestation as the combination of the soul and material elements, and can also see the situation of super soul, becomes eligible for transfer to the spiritual world. These things are meant for contemplation and for realization, and one should have a complete understanding of this chapter with the help of the spiritual master.
Comment?
To me, it sums everything up.
Yeah. A faithful person should at first have some good association here of God and gradually become enlightened. Gradual process. And hearing is especially recommended in the beginning. Touch Srinu. Krishna says in the beginning of the seventh chapter, just hear from me. And jnanam teham savijnanam idam bhakshami asheshata. Just by hearing, one becomes aware of the phenomenal world and the noumenal world. He sees the difference between matter and spirit. In other words, he sees everything. So Krishna says, mayata tamidam sarvam jagadavyakta murtina matstani sarva bhutanam bhutani nachaham tesha vastita. Now, maya, what is that? Seventh chapter, first verse. Maya sakta mana partha yogam yunyan marashaya asamshayam samagramam yatagyasasi touch Srinu. Prabhupada's most frequently quoted verse in which Krishna says, touch Srinu, hear from me by shravanam, by the direct process of shravanam in devotional service. One comes to this position of seeing jnanam teham savi, he gains all knowledge and detachment. You can use the mic.
These points are meant for contemplation and realization. So we do have to look within and contemplate these things and realize them. We can hear about them and not contemplate them and not realize them, and just remain on the level of the mind as a concept. So we need to be able to make that distinction ourselves, you know. Am I realizing this, or am I just holding this in mind as a concept?
Rakshit?
The process mentioned here, which you essentially repeated, that to come to this stage is through hearing. Hearing is one of the 9 processes of devotional service. So that is a path that is defined. We can say again, there is contemplation and there is realization, and we would be going into Jnana Yoga and all that. And Jnana Yoga is fine because Krishna even says, Bhunam Janmanam Gnante Gnanvan Mam prapadyante vasudev sarvam iti mahatma sudurlapa. There is that rare soul who, through the process of Jnana Yoga, will finally come to the point that Vasudeva is everything and surrender. So that path is there. But the path of devotional service, the nine processes of devotional service, hearing, remembering, chanting, worshipping the Lord, offering obeisances to his lotus feet, considering the Lord as one's best friend, etc., is the process which is also going to lead to knowledge. The same knowledge that he's talking about in the 13th chapter, to know the distinction between matter and spirit. We are not the body, we are the soul, who is the knower. And also within the knower, there is a super knower who knows all the other bodies, that one can come to this knowledge through the process of devotional service.
And just to harmonize, if I may, Bhagavad Gita gives, Krishna gives many different ideas about advancing in spiritual life, and it's about one's adhikari or qualification to take to these things. And I referred to this earlier when I mentioned Queen Kunti, when she said, I'm not qualified to be a jnani. I can't introspect. I'm not an introspector. I'm a simple person. And there are various mentalities and qualifications which are all accommodated throughout the Bhagavad Gita. And one, according to one's qualification, takes to a particular process and can advance from there. In the third canto, again, when Devahuti approached her son, who was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and wanted self-realization, he started telling her all these things about Sankhya Yoga and, you know, introspection. And she said, I don't get it. She said, I don't understand any of this. She said, it seems to me, even after you telling me all these things, that the body and the self are the same thing. I really don't, she said, I must be so implicated in this that I can't see the difference. And Kapiladeva replied to her that you, by hearing over a long period of time, that the subtle body will actually be dissolved in this process of devotional service, and one will, he recommended hearing over a long period of time for her. There may be others who have qualification, the adhikari, to perform other kinds of processes of devotional service, and Krishna is encouraging all of them. Therefore, there's a yoga ladder. And, sway sway adhikariya nishta, saguna parikirtita. Krishna tells later Uddhava, in the Uddhava Gita, which is a more detailed even look at the Bhagavad Gita, he says, according to one's adhikari, one should engage. That's a good quality. Then he says, vipariyo tu dosha syad. The opposite is true. If you engage in something you don't have adhikari for, like, you know, being a jnani or doing something like that, or trying to do the topmost kind of bhakti practice when you don't have qualification for it. Like many times, devotees who came to Krishna consciousness, we'd go on a trip to India with Prabhupada, and then some of them would see Radha Kund and say, I'll just stay here. You know, Prabhupada had told us, come for a month, look at the holy dham, and then go back and work hard. Because he looked at us coming off of whatever we were coming off of and said, this is what you need to do. That's your adhikari. And some people would say, well, I'm just going to sit down like Haridas Thakur and chant. And they were unsuccessful. They didn't have the adhikari for it. So this is why in that verse, Prabhupada mentioned that one should have guidance, because a spiritual master will be able to guide a person in this non-stereotype process and according to one's propensity. And I've seen plenty of people come to Krishna consciousness that had no propensity for sitting down and introspecting. But they had lots of adhikari for fixing cars and, taking out the trash, and they became blissful. And they advanced in devotional service, and they got antar sukh to the max. I mean, I know people like that. Even today, you know, you can see there are devotees who are revered devotees who never stop working. They're all over the place, you know, fixing this, that. Their hands are greasy. Jayananda was like that. He was a famous devotee who we both knew well. And he didn't do a lot of sitting around meditating. It wasn't his qualification. His thing was under the truck, under the cart, fixing something, moving here. And then he was an exalted devotee, and he had Antar Sukh. So according to one's adhikari and position in life, in this non-stereotype process, one takes under guidance from somebody who has experience and objectivity to engage us in devotional service in a proper way to the process, and we will advance. Ultimately, Tesham Satatu Yuktanam, this verse in purport, Prabhupada said, even if one doesn't have the intelligence to take advantage of a spiritual master, if he's a little sincere, Krishna from within the heart will guide him. So, you know, every angle of people, different kinds of adhikari, are mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam, who take the devotional service from different angles of qualification. Does that harmonize? Okay? Ding! This is important. What we're doing is important because to sit together and hear Shastra from different angles of seeing. Siddhanta Bulya Chitanakara Alash. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Kaviraj Goswami says, don't be lazy about this and don't be afraid to wrangle it up with the, you know, different angles of seeing. You bring it in and you, from different angles of seeing, this is what makes you strong in devotional service. We were waiting for you. We had the dictionary and everything. We looked up one word. It would have been three or four if you had been here. So anyway, this is the important process of gaining strength in Krishna consciousness, to sit crammed in a room hearing Shastra from different angles of seeing, because when we hear the philosophy, even especially, I would say, when it becomes, when there are different angles of seeing, there's thesis, antithesis, synthesis. So we're experiencing that in this process of hearing and chanting. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki. Yeah. Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki. Yeah. Gopremanande Haribo.